edition of World Crisis Radio. I'm your host, Webster Tarpley, here in Washington, D.C. 80 years ago, when Heinrich Brüning, the austerity dictator, the equivalent of a modern Austrian school, Chicago school, austerity freak, sort of what you've got now in New Jersey with Christie or in Virginia with McDonnell, and you're going to have it in New York State with Ravitch. Brüning took power 80 years ago. That was March 30th, 1930, 80 years ago, the end of this month. And we'll get to that in a minute. But let's look on the bright side, and let's look on the side of program and of mobilization for something positive. And this is the Robin Hood tax. Yes, indeed. The Robin Hood tax. The Tobin tax. In effect, the securities transfer tax, financial transfer tax, trading tax, Wall Street sales tax. Please go to Tarpley.net and take a look at this. You'll see it all laid out there, I hope in pedagogical form with all the necessary links. And it is simply this. There has been now, for the last couple of years, a campaign in which I have obviously participated for a Tobin tax. That is to say, in this economic depression, as we get deeper into it, there's more and more concern about how to provide tax revenue to keep teachers, policemen, firemen, state workers, health workers, and other people on the job to maintain the essential fabric of human civilization, without which no individual, no matter how gifted, could really do too much. Therefore, we need some tax revenue. Obviously, you don't want to raise tax rates on the people that are already overtaxed, which is about 95% of the current population. Certainly the poor, working people, working families, the middle class, and so forth, even into the upper middle class, already very heavily taxed. Obviously, Wall Street financier, oligarchs, parasites in a different class. So you look around the society and you say, what is the largest pool of wealth? Or are there any pools of wealth or flows of at least monetary wealth, which are not taxed? And what you find there is Wall Street, as usual, the tax immunity enjoyed by Wall Street speculative transactions. We find that Goldman Sachs is able successfully to circumvent and evade the corporate income tax. The estimates are now that Goldman Sachs last year, 2009, paid between 1% and 2% of their total profits in taxes. That is much less than the poorest people down in the 15% bracket in the U.S. federal income tax. The most obvious thing, therefore, is to say, well, since Goldman Sachs, you have succeeded in frustrating the purposes of the federal corporate tax, we're going to come after you on the basis of your turnover, not your profits, your turnover, your buying and selling. We're going to hit you with a sales tax. Everybody knows what a sales tax is. Most U.S. states, it's between 6 to 7% and 10 to 11%. And the average person pays this on all transactions, clothing, shoes, consumer electronics, furniture, you name it. In many of these states, you have to pay that sales tax on groceries, meaning that this becomes a very significant bite out of your total income. It is a regressive tax. But then we look at Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan. We look at Citibank, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and the rest of the Wall Street zombie banks, hedge funds, and counting houses in general. And we ask, when they do their program trading, when they trade total, it's total between $1 quadrillion and $2 quadrillion a year of turnover in the United States of derivatives. That is to say, futures, options, indices, combinations of those, stocks, bonds, foreign exchange, commodities, and other kinds of paper speculative transactions, electronic too. Do they pay anything on that? No, the answer is zero, nothing, nada. That is absolutely tax-free. It is, in effect, subsidized. They pay zero. You pay 8 to 9 to 10% in many parts of the U.S. So what is the reason for this? Before 1789, before the French Revolution, the position of the French nobility was, you can't tax us because we are the nobility. That's what we have now with Wall Street. They basically say, you can't tax us. We're financier oligarchs. We own and rule this society. We own Obama. We own the Congress, and so forth. They do program trading. That's fast. They do high-frequency trading. That's even faster. And they do flash trading. That's the fastest of all so far. We're getting into the thousands of transactions per second plus, and nothing but nothing is paid on this. There is no taxation. And therefore, the proposal that I've made and others have made, and it's now been joined by the AFL-CIO, the trade unions, Robert Kuttner, many others, Jesse Jackson just came on board, is to say, impose a tax on their turnover, a sales tax on them, so that whether they gain profit or make losses or wash and make, break even, the public treasury in Washington and in the states will benefit, so that we can keep those essential things about civilization, the little things like teachers, policemen, firemen. You want to have property? Try having property without a police force. You better pay them, and you better pay them now. You want to have property? You better have a fire department, and you better pay them, and you better pay them now. If you have kids, or if you want to have workers who can read and write, you better have a public school system, and you better pay the teachers and keep up the buildings. Therefore, this is an imperative. You cannot have California going bankrupt, New York going bankrupt, City of Los Angeles, and so on down the line. Now, the immediate political focus is coming out of Europe. Europe has been under attack by the Wall Street hedge funds, as we've documented here. Soros, Goldman Sachs, and the rest of the gang have been attacking Greece, Spain, Ireland, Italy, Portugal, the so-called pigs group, the weak flank, the Mediterranean or southern flank of the euro, as a means of attacking the euro, getting a euro crisis going, and masking the collapse of the dollar with a more rapid collapse of the euro. And therefore, the people in Europe, some elements, are attempting to strike back. Now, these are not pristine people. These are people who are obviously deeply compromised in all sorts of horrible things that have gone on lately. But here it is. On March 11th, the European Parliament voted by about 536-85, I think, to demand a Tobin tax. That is to say, a European Union-wide tax on stock turnover, derivatives, and other financial transactions. And that is that's a done deal. And all of the groups went with it. That is to say, the moderate conservatives, the Christian Democrats, the Social Democrats, essentially all of the groups in the European Parliament, except the British Tories, the hidebound, ultra-reactionary British Conservative Party, the heirs and heiresses of Margaret Thatcher, and naturally the voice of the City of London, which is the worst concentration of speculative vultures anywhere in Europe, although Frankfurt is coming up fast and attempting to overtake them in this this kind of a contest. Now, here's the other focus. In Britain, there will be a parliamentary election, a general election, sometime this spring. It can't really be more than 2 or 3 months off at the very most. Once the election is called, you have a one-month election campaign and then a vote for a new parliament. Now, the problem here is, we know that Gordon Brown, of course, is a monster. Gordon Brown is the person who invented the bailout, and he began bailouts worldwide with Northern Rock in 2007, followed then by Royal Bank of Scotland, Lloyds Bank in 2008. There are a lot of people in the Labour Party who don't want to go down to defeat with Gordon Brown, and they are turning to the Tobin tax, as we will explain in the next segment.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Now, we're looking at the Tobin tax, the Wall Street sales tax. If you didn't like the bailout, it means you didn't like the federal government giving money to Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, and Citibank. So if you didn't like the bailout, Then you're going to like the Tobin tax, which is clawing back that money and more over time, and using that for the purposes of maintaining civilization. And if you don't like the Tobin tax, then we ask, what in God's name do you like? If you don't want the bailout, then you better like the Tobin tax, or you are basically out of this world because you're not relating to the main issue, which is Wall Street. You're either for them or against them. With the bailout, you're for them, and with the Tobin tax, you're against them. And if you're not against them, then you will be descending into the underworld at a very rapid rate. And there's no way around the issue. Right? Don't say, I prefer to be anti-government. That's not going to cut the mustard. The enemy is in Wall Street, and the problem with the government is that it's controlled by Wall Street. So fight Wall Street or be damned. That's the essential imperative of our time. Now, some people in the British Labour Party understand this. For a long time now, the polls over the last months have been saying that the British Labour Party, because of the multiple crimes of Tony Blair, going back to the Iraq War and various assassinations and God knows what, that the British Labour Party also, because of the crimes of Gordon Brown, the instigator of the worldwide bailout mania and fad, that they were doomed and that they would get thrown out. Ultimately, that would happen, except now, possibly, a question mark has come into that equation because now of the attempt of various people in the Trade Union Federation of Great Britain, the TUC, Trades Union Congress, and the Labour Party left, being joined by people from the Liberal Democratic Party as well as people from the Conservatives, right? A few odd Tories coming in there, too, which is understandable. Coming in for what they call the Robin Hood tax. Now, here's what I recommend. Go and look at Robin Hood tax. Put that on a search engine, Robin Hood tax, and you will go to the website of this campaign. And what you will see there is this guy, Bill Nighy, N-I-G-H-Y, N-I-G-H-Y. He's a famous British actor. You will have seen him in various movies. I understand he's going to appear in the next Harry Potter, whatever that is. So this is a person of some note. And he dramatizes a conversation with a finance oligarch in the city of London where the finance oligarch is trying to dismiss and poo-poo the idea of a Robin Hood tax, Tobin tax, Wall Street sales tax, security transfer tax, but is forced then to admit that there is no reason in equity, fairness, economic justice, or any other conceivable technical reason why this can't be done and actually forced to concede that it would have many, many positive features. And you'll see there a list of the people who have supported this. It now includes, as of last weekend, the Archbishop of Canterbury. The Archbishop of Canterbury being an important person in the British oligarchy, inside the ruling elite, the Archbishop of Canterbury is certainly a person of some authority, right? This is basically the head of the state-sponsored Church of England, of course, with the Queen being the actual head of it. He's the one who runs it from day to day. So we have a whole bunch of trade unions. We have the International Metalworkers Federation. That includes the UAW, the International Association of Machinists, the Communications Workers of America. It's sort of the militant international trade union body. They're for it. These groups in the European Parliament are for it, and so forth. You can see that the hope is, by the people in the British Labour Party, that if they can somehow get this thing launched, they can get enough popularity to save themselves. That's obviously their immediate goal. There's a poll that 80% of British adults want a tax on the City of London, i.e. the equivalent of Wall Street. The big banks, the hedge funds, the counting houses, the financial parasites. Let them pay. Let them pay something. Now, this is growing. You can see the website. You can see there's a website which is quite similar in German called Steuer gegen Armut. If you can read German, Steuer gegen Armut, tax against poverty, you'll find the same thing, and you'll even find the same dramatization, the same little skit with a couple of German actors doing it, with this time with the Brandenburg Gate and the Reichstag building in Berlin in the background. So this is all getting quite a bit of exposure. The British election will be held now within months. And here's the thing. If we see the British Labour Party either saving themselves from total defeat or at least minimizing their losses by making this Tobin tax, Robin Hood tax, an issue in the campaign. This will get the attention of the desperados here in the Democratic Party of the United States, because whether they pass Obamacare or not, and we hope that they don't, but if they do or if they don't, their situation will still be the same. They will be desperately looking for economic populist street creds. You're going to see the Republicans coming out driving pickup trucks, wearing plaid shirts, chewing tobacco with pork rinds and jelly beans, and shooting moose from helicopters. You're going to see an orgy of cultural populism from our dear demagogic reactionary Republican friends. So what are the Democrats going to do? The only thing they can do, most of them can't do those things. They can't get across with a plaid shirt. Imagine Pelosi coming in a plaid shirt, and she's not going to be part of this. But the average rank-and-file Democratic House member in the Northeast, the Midwest, into California and such places, they need economic populist street creds. How do you get it? You go with the Tobin tax. Again, the AFL-CIO is for it. Robert Kuttner is for it. Jesse Jackson is for it. You've essentially got key parts of labor, the black community, liberal intellectuals, theoreticians, and others, think tankers in Washington, who are now for this. And, of course, more than any article or campaign of articles or any kind of press campaign, if they see it work for the British Labour Party left, then they will conclude that it could work here too. Now, naturally, there are a lot of problems with the Robin Hood tax that it's brought up. First of all, it is brought up. It's not clear in many ways whether it is a national tax or whether it is a supranational tax. Suffice it to say, we here are for the national tax. We want that money for Washington, and we want the money for the state capitals, half and half. Half goes to Washington, half goes to the state capitals. They talk about it as something that's going to deal with global warming. Well, global warming is a fraud. On the other hand, in Europe, it's hard to get by with anything less than global warming, given the ideological decadence that has occurred. Everything depends on how you pitch this. If you mean by dealing with global warming to build modern nuclear reactors and modern fast rail, that's fine. Then you're reducing the carbon footprint if you insist on putting it this way. But you're not creating harm. You're actually creating something good. If, on the other hand, you mean these idiotic green jobs and various kinds of flimflam, then that's no good. So that's the bad part. We want it as a national tax. And we'll have a few more things on this in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Tax, the securities transfer tax, trading tax, Wall Street sales tax is probably the best term for the U.S. The Wall Street sales tax. Now, the Robin Hood tax proposal up there at Robin Hood tax in Britain and Armut gegen Steuer in Germany. The question with this is, it's not clear whether it's supposed to be national or something else. Here in the U.S., there's no doubt it should be national. In the European Union, you might want to do it at a European level to prevent this race to the bottom stuff. But over here, national, with then the states participating in the revenue and some equitable form of distribution among the states, which otherwise would concentrate the revenue in New York, Massachusetts, Illinois, and California. We don't want it quite that concentrated, because we want other states to benefit from this, to participate in the results, in the revenue. Be a national tax. It should not be used for global warming in the sense that a radical ecologist or global warming freak normally understands this. The other thing is that their proposal is way too small. They're proposing 1/20 of 1%. The proposal in Europe on the Robin Hood tax website says we'll charge a 1/20 of 1% tax. That is 0.05%. tax, and get 150 billion euros European Union wide, with about don't know, something like 4 to 8 billion pounds being for the British side of the budget. This is too low. If you came out with that, you could live with it, but that's looking at it the wrong way. You're going into it now. You're going into a process of fighting and ultimately of haggling. So you better get it up to 1%, because if you take it down to 1/20 of 1%, you're going to come out with nothing. If you come out, if you start with 1%, you're going to come out with something more respectable. Even the AFL-CIO, which is no bulwark of radicalism, is demanding 1/10 of 1%, 1 mil. So that's twice as much as this Robin Hood tax. So the Robin Hood tax has to be increased. It has to be national. It has to be cut away from this nonsense about climate change. And also then, if you're talking about third world development, the way you do that that makes sense is you say this tax will be used for export financing of high technology capital goods made in the United States, in our case, or made in Britain or made in the European Union, and shift into the third world. Not the idea that you're going to give money to some elite in some African country. This has been tried. It doesn't work well. What you got to say is we're going to deliver capital goods to you, and we're going to help you install them and get them going. That leads to economic development. Otherwise, you're asking for the money essentially to disappear into the night. And also, I don't necessarily mean that the local elites are going to steal it, but the banks sure will. In other words, they'll demand that that money be used for debt service on loans owed to the Club of London, Club of Paris. That is to say, the private and the London private and public and the Parisian group, the private debtors of the third world. So we don't want any of that. So with those caveats, and there's obviously, you know, problems in Sherwood Forest, take a look at my website, tarpley.net, as always, is the starting point from day to day on all of these issues. So take a look at tarpley.net and then take a look at Robin Hood tax. And get this going, right? Congressman DeFazio is for it. You got a lot of leftists in the Democratic House faction who are now essentially cast adrift by Obama, and they're going to try to save themselves. So in this general breakdown of the system, this is the one impulse vector going on right now that leads in a positive direction. Now, having said all this, let's lift and shift over to the Obama healthcare situation. This is now on the verge of a thinly veiled dictatorship, being a trampling on the Constitution in unprecedented ways. The big news yesterday, that is to say Thursday of this week, is that Congressman Kucinich, who had been posturing as a principled opponent of the Obama bailout of insurance companies, since that is what it is, and I would add destruction of Medicare, because that's also what it is. Congressman Kucinich has now betrayed every principle that he claimed to have and has rolled over, as usual, for Obama. We were not surprised. You notice I wrote things about stopping Obamacare. I never cited Kucinich because you could tell this moment is coming. He is too weak. He is too compromised. He is morally no longer there. So Kucinich has betrayed his base. This is supposedly the leader of the left wing of the Democratic Party. This is a bad joke. Remember, this is the guy who transferred his delegates in the Iowa caucus back in early 2008. Even before the first caucus was over, Kucinich had transferred his support to Obama. So he's part of this monstrosity, and he was present at the creation. Kucinich has now been joined by Lynn Woolsey, the really airhead leader of the Progressive Caucus. This woman is of a superficiality and a silliness, which is simply embarrassing. If you look around the commentators on this issue, I think the one that has the clearest view, the one most resembling my own, and therefore which I cordially support, Glenn Ford over at the Black Agenda Report, I think has the line. You can listen to his brief radio commentary and Kucinich. Now, this is essentially Kucinich betrays all of his principles. Democratic Party, rest in peace. The Democratic Party is now a rotten carcass. It is clear that you can go into Democratic primaries for the purpose of poaching there and getting things done there. But the idea of being a loyal member of the Democratic Party, this idea is now useless and obsolete. They have turned definitively against the heritage of Franklin D. Roosevelt. In other words, this subservience to Wall Street, this idea that you'd have a health care plan, which is a bailout of bankrupt insurance companies, a bailout of insurance companies that have bankrupted themselves by derivatives speculation, which is what this is an insult to everything that Franklin D. Roosevelt stood for. He fought Wall Street, was hated by Wall Street, and defeated Wall Street. Obama, of course, a Wall Street puppet, and Rahm Emanuel, a Wall Street thug enforcer. So that's one. The second one, of course, Lyndon B. Johnson. Well, his great achievement, Medicare, great humanitarian triumph, saved countless hundreds of thousands, millions of lives over the past decades. This is now going to carve $500 billion out of Medicare. That will cause deaths. And then Kennedy, of course. We know Kennedy was famous for the moonshot, NASA, and the Apollo program. Well, that has now been destroyed by Obama. So in the key categories, we see that all of that hype from Newsweek magazine and the rest of these idiots at the beginning of 2009 that Obama was the new Roosevelt, the new Johnson, the new Kennedy, all nonsense, all lies and idiocy and filth. He is the absolute antithesis of all of those. So the Democratic Party, rest in peace, a thinly veiled dictatorship is at hand. Now, the form of Obama's bill is that of the Mussolini fascist corporate state. And I stress, I'm not throwing this out as some kind of an epithet or, you know, gratuitous insult, you know, you're a fascist, this, that, and the other thing. But this is a very precise structural definition of the component parts of Obama's plan. Remember, the fascist corporate state, as practiced by Mussolini and then copied on later by National Socialism in Germany, is that of a state-sponsored compulsory cartel for the purpose of driving down wages, driving down production or production of services, and propping up speculative, fictitious claims on income. In other words, today, derivatives and all kinds of Wall Street speculation. We will show in just a minute that this is what Obama is doing. Back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Welcome back to World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Now, the Obama health bill, the thing that is being created now by this legislation is the reorganization of the U.S. healthcare system along the lines, and there is no other way to define it, of the Mussolini fascist corporate state, as started in Italy in the 1920s and then transferred into Germany in the 1930s. That is to say, a state-sponsored compulsory cartel for the purpose of driving down wages, driving down production, or in this case, services and production, and propping up fictitious capital speculation and Wall Street ripoffs in the specific U.S. case. How does this happen? Now, the state-sponsored compulsory cartel, or better yet, government-sponsored for U.S. conditions, a government-sponsored compulsory cartel essentially says that you're not being offered Medicare for all. You're not being offered a government plan, as in the case of Medicare, which works as well as anything. But you're going to be forced to buy. You are going to be compelled, coerced, at gunpoint practically, into buying insurance from a private, for-profit, deregulated company with golden parachutes and stockholders and dividends and all the rest of it, all money that's taken out of healthcare, out of your pocket and into their pocket, and you are forced to buy this, a clearly unconstitutional procedure. A government-sponsored compulsory cartel, if you don't meet the guidelines that they set up, you can't join the compulsory cartel. In other words, they will pick who is eligible for participation in the government government-sponsored compulsory cartel. Now, government-sponsored compulsory cartel might be fine depending on the purposes, but in this case, it's clear what the purposes are. To drive down wages, the amounts paid to hospitals and to medical doctors will be driven down. The amounts paid for reimbursements for specific procedures will be driven down. So it's to drive down wages, and the level of service in general will be driven down. So it leads to a massive degradation of the existing system in terms of what it's able to produce and to provide. What is the purpose? Well, clearly, to prop up the bankrupt insurance companies. Some of the biggest participants in the Wall Street casino, biggest derivative speculators, are these insurance companies. So it is to prop up their derivatives, their speculative bets gone bad, their bankrupt transactions, that you are going to be looted. So this, I think, will be reviewed by the Supreme Court. Now, over at the Supreme Court, of course, we got the rats cabal, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia. They should be against this, as dyed-in-the-wool reactionaries, every one. On the other hand, their dyed-in-the-wool reactionary ideology obviously is going to yield, or tend to yield, to the demands of Wall Street, which is ultimately the warm heart of every reactionary, goes out to Wall Street, because it simply has to, given the way that the political system works. There will be a chance to repeal it if it passes, or let me get it, let's not put the cart before the horse. There's still a very concrete chance that it will fail, that what Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Clyburn, Van Hollen, and the rest of them are engaged in is a colossal bluff. If it should pass, there's about 3 or 4 years when you're paying into it before you get anything out of it. That can then be repealed. And there's always the possibility of a Supreme Court challenge. And here, the reactionaries in the states are hopefully going to do yeoman service to bring this before the Supreme Court by refusing to participate in it. And at the way that it's going, I think that's true. The idea that you can be forced to buy a product from a for-profit private company by the coercion of the federal government, I think that is unconstitutional. You could do it constitutionally in the following way. You could say everybody's income tax is raised by 7%. No matter who you are, where you are, your income tax goes up by 7 or 8% or whatever it is. And then if you buy insurance and can show that you've bought it, we'll then give you a tax credit for the equivalent amount. That's the kind of tax credit that you get in the education credits, if you look at those on the 1040 federal income tax return. But that would be constitutional. But to force you to go directly and buy it from a group of people that they pre-designate, that is unconstitutional. So the other thing, of course, the death boards. Yeah, well, there are death boards. There are death boards and death panels and what you call it. MedPAC on steroids. In other words, the federal deliberative bodies that will decide whether the technologies are cost-effective, whether you get a mammogram, whether you get a pap smear, whether you get a prostate-specific antigen test, and so on down the line, right? Whether you get the whole array of tests that modern medicine has been able to develop, they will be into the business of denying you care because they are Malthusian bureaucrats. Look at Peter Orszag, the unspeakable enemy of all medical tests, with no medical qualifications of his own, a bean counter with his propeller beanie going around and around as he thinks about all the tests that he's going to deny you for the purposes of deficit reduction. This idea of deficit reduction is a mania of the elite, which has infected certain depraved, lunatic circles of the average citizenry. But for most people, this is not the immediate main issue. It is the main issue being economic survival and health care for your kid. However, the obsession of the elitists is now trumping the rest. Now, the other thing about this, and this is very serious, we're on the verge of parliamentary suicide. We're on the verge of a thinly veiled dictatorship. One side of it is what we've seen last week. Rahm Emanuel's war against left-wing progressive anti-war Democrats, and particularly the Black Caucus. Take a look at that article by Wayne Madsen, which is posted in various places on the Internet. Rahm Emanuel's secret war against the Black Caucus. He has driven out Rangel, has deprived him of his chairmanship. John Conyers at the House Judiciary Committee will be next. Benny Thompson at House Homeland Security coming up, and maybe even Adolphus Towns at the Government Affairs Committee. We've seen the governor of New York, David Paterson, explicitly, openly attacked by the Rahm Emanuel White House, and the person being groomed is this Ravitch, a creature of Felix Rohatyn, who will bring, rule by decree, an austerity dictatorship to Albany, an austerity dictatorship in which the New York State Assembly and State Senate will count for nothing, and austerity decrees will be issued in the interest of Wall Street bankers by austerity bureaucrats, little Brunings, as I call them, and we'll get to Bruning maybe in the second part of today's broadcast. So this is one side. The reign of terror, the threatening of Massa, the obvious threatening of Kucinich, who has now caved in, right? The arm-twisting death threats and God knows what coming from Rahm Emanuel behind the scenes, that's going on. So what kind of a reign? What is the historical precedent for this stuff? Well, I can give you one. I've often compared Obama to Mussolini, and I think this is the right comparison. I've talked about now the Mussolini fascist corporate state as the structural model, institutional model for the Obama healthcare plan. Let's look at Mussolini's relations with the Italian parliament. Remember, Mussolini took power in October of 1922 after the March on Rome. He was not the total dictator that Hitler was, for example, right at the beginning. Mussolini had to consolidate himself over a period of years as the total dictator, because there was still the king, there was still the parliament, there was still some kind of a constitution working. So Mussolini had to impose all of that. One of the things Mussolini did was, of course, the reign of terror against the parliament, that is to say beatings, killings, threats, killings of relatives, and so forth. Today we have deem and pass. We deem that the Senate bill has been passed in the House, and we add the following reconciliation. So this is a way to get around voting and get around majority rule. I think probably unconstitutional, but certainly more in the spirit of Mussolini than of anything else. What Mussolini did was he found that he did not have a sufficient majority in the Italian parliament by 1923, a year after he had taken over, to get what he wanted done. So he came up with something called the legge truffa, the swindle law, let's call it, to get a majority. And I'll tell you how that goes in probably the sixth segment. We'll be back in just a minute.